Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Scared Stiff Horror Podcast. I am your host, Doug Plumatello, joined, as always, by my co-host, Dalen Lane. How you doing, Dalen?
I'm good. I'm excited. It's been a while. It's been too long.
I know. I feel really bad. I know both of us have been really, really busy, like beyond busy, and I feel really bad. We've tried to record, I feel, every week, but something has happened every time we try to record. But you know what? Damn it, we're here today, and we've got a fun show for everyone.
I'm pumped. And also, I know that you guys cannot see this, but I am wearing the new, the greatest Halloween candy hoodie, which will soon be available. It looks so good. It's so comfortable. I love it. And it's actually warm. So I came ready today to bring that heat.
I love it. Yeah, they came out very nice. Very soft, very cozy.
Yeah.
Speaking of Halloween candy, by the time this airs, the trailer will be live.
Oh my God. I'm so excited.
I know. I've been very nervous to put anything out. And I've done a lot of stuff before. I've done over 80 short films, never been hesitant to release any content, but this one has got me a little nervous. I won't lie.
You showed me very kindly a little sample of it, and I thought it looked so good and crisp. And I think that you guys are going to enjoy it. So I'm very excited for Doug to finally release the little teaser.
Cool. Yeah. And you can see Dalen's amazing makeup work.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. I don't think that stole the show. I think very much you're writing, directing, you doing all of the things except for acting. That's what's going to steal the show for Halloween candy. But thank you. Yes.
Yeah. So let us know what you think. Share it with your friends. Post it on the socials if you see it and you like it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, so since I've seen you last, what have you been up to? Have you watched anything good, anything scary?
You know, I watched, do you know the film Vamp? I think it's from the 80s with Grace Jones, who plays a vampire.
No, I have not seen it.
So I had heard about it previously. It's like a cult film. It's B-movie. And Grace Jones plays this vampire in a, not prostitute house, in a strip club. God, as Doug mentioned, we're very low brain fuel, me in particular. So yeah, that's what we're dealing with today.
We're on fumes today.
And anyway, she's fantastic in it. Not much speaking; it's mostly just sounds. But she is such a force. And then watched a few documentaries, watched a few other horror films. But honestly, over the last couple weeks, that's what stood out. And then we also went to Monster Mania, which was really fun, and we got to hang out there too.
That's right. Yeah, we haven't recorded since Monster Mania. Yeah, that was a fun show. That show's grown a lot. We did the Cherry Hill version of Monster Mania, and they've really expanded. It's a pretty big show.
Yeah, and they're doing it again in August. I think now they do it twice a year, which is pretty standard. But we're also looking to go to some other conventions. So if you guys have any that you think we should go to, especially those really on the East Coast, you know, Northeast, we'll say, we would love to get there and even set up some interviews with some folks. So definitely keep us posted if you have any ideas for us.
Absolutely. Maybe we'll have a Halloween candy booth.
Yeah, I would love to. But yeah, what have you been?
Yeah, no, other than working, working on Halloween candy, got the trailer out there. Been watching a lot of stuff. I've slowed down a little bit, but as of April 10th, is when we're recording this, I'm up to 198 movies for the calendar year of 2024. So I'm taking in a lot of content.
So I was actually thinking about when we discussed this last, and I realized I really don't do a good job of writing down and keeping track of the films that I've watched. And I feel like it's too late in the year, even though it's just now freshly April, it's just too late in the year to start writing them down. But next year, I'm going to start writing them down because I appreciate that you keep track.
Yeah, I have to, because like even this morning when I was looking through Tubi for something to watch and I scrolled through a couple of movies, oh, this would be fun to watch. And I looked and I had watched it maybe back in August. So I was like, oh, I already saw this recently. And I forget that I even saw certain movies until I look up my list. You know, I remember watching The Roommate last year and it took me 45 minutes before I realized I'd watched it just the previous year. And I looked at my list. I was like, crap, I watched this already. Not that I rewatch a lot of things. I rewatched Red State yesterday. I went through a Kevin Smith marathon recently. So
fun.
You know, it's not all horror movies that I'm watching. I do a lot of docs as well.
Yeah, I'm also a big documentary person, docuseries. Not, I like true crime, but actually I don't necessarily watch true crime documentaries. I like just other stuff. But yeah, I feel like I've been... Oh, and did we talk about Dune 2? I did see Dune 2 in the theater, and that I will talk to anyone about because I just think it's so beautiful, so freaking good. And have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't.
Ugh, are you a fan? Did you watch the...
I didn't watch part one either. Nope.
You are a sci-fi fan, aren't you?
Not really. I don't dislike it. Like, I watch stuff, but I'm not massively into... I think it's like, I would rather watch a movie that takes place in the world that I live in.
Okay.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Although I did like Jason X.
I can talk about Jason X all the time. I love that film so much. I'm sure a drinking game exists. Not that you should drink and or not drink, but I need to create a drinking game for Jason X because... Yeah, I just really that film. Also, the older I get, the more I love that film, and I don't know what that says about my age and me as a person, but...
Well, I think sometimes movies, they become comfort food. You know, there are certain movies that I've watched, and I watched this morning, I watched Psycho 3 is one of the movies I watched. I've seen that at least a dozen times, but yeah. It's comfort food, you know?
So what have you watched in the last couple of weeks? Anything really stand out to you?
Well, let me pull up my list here.
Yeah.
Let's see what we got. Bear with me. I rewatched Man's Best Friend. I hadn't watched that since it came out back in 93. That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I went through a phase a couple weeks ago and I was watching a bunch of documentaries on video games. That was kind of fun.
Was it a Netflix docuseries? I feel like, was it The Games That Made Us or something like that? You know, like the films that made us?
There's one called like Token Taverns, and it was like arcades and how they survived through COVID.
That sounds actually, where did you watch that?
That was Tubi. Tubi's got a lot of good stuff. I want to say the majority of the things I watch are on Tubi.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only because I usually work out. I do cardio. I watch my movies a lot of times. And the Blu-ray player I use only gets Tubi. For some reason, Netflix, it's too slow. I guess the Netflix bitrate is too high that my Blu-ray player has a hard time. So I watched a ton of Tubi. A lot of stuff there.
Well, you were the first person to really put me on to Tubi, and I love it too. I do have a tendency, I think, because of where the app is placed on my TV. Sometimes I forget about it. However, every single time I put that app on, I always find something that ranges from pretty good to excellent. I've yet to have a really bad film experience there, but yeah, I really like that app.
The new layout, the new colors, I'm still growing on me. I was a fan of the orange and white, but hey, I only need to look at it for a couple seconds, so I shouldn't complain.
I like the little Tubi.
Add a little jingle, which is fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's become a real player, you know?
Yeah,
like they're competing with subscription-based streaming services, and they hold their own, you know. And now with Netflix putting ads on their movies, that makes Tubi stand out even more because Tubi's free.
Well, didn't they also just change their business model a little bit? So I think they're no longer working with. Wait, let me make sure I have the wording correct. I think they're not necessarily working with independent filmmakers anymore. They're looking for. What's the wording? I remember reading something about this. Like they're now
shifting
a little bit, which is a bummer. I mean, I get it that they're looking to make money, but that's really a shame because so many independent filmmakers loved being a part of the Tubi family. And I also feel like as someone who likes using the app, that will kind of cut down on some of the independent content that is really difficult to find anywhere else.
Figures, right when we have an independent movie coming out this Halloween.
I know.
That's all right.
We'll find a way.
Yeah, it'll be out there for people to watch. We'll get it out there. Yeah. So I guess I should say we do have a little bad news this week. So a little PSA for people to reach out to your loved ones if you haven't seen them or talked to them for a while. So there was a director, it was a good friend of mine, but he was a director. He actually directed the 7th ever Scared Stiff short film back in 2009. And last time I talked to him, Dan Cooper Bay, was back in 2020, February of 2020. We were planning on getting together and having a bite to eat. And then, you know, COVID happened and we put it off. And I called him a couple months ago, never heard back, texted him, never heard back. So I Googled him and he passed away in June.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, I know. And I didn't even know. You know, it wasn't on social media. We didn't actually have that many mutual friends, so I didn't see anyone post anything about it. But PSA to, you know, reach out to your loved ones, and because they're not always going to be there.
So. Yeah. Oh, that sucks. I'm sorry about that, Doug, and I'm sorry to his family. And I'm sorry. That must have been very jarring to also see, you know, trying to look him up and stuff. Ugh.
Yeah, I know. But hey, he was a good guy, you know, talented guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. I don't know what he passed away of. It didn't say in the article, but just, you know, it's kind of sad.
Yeah, definitely make sure you do reach out to loved ones. It's good to just check on them. I think sometimes people forget that everyone needs attention, even if they're not showing it. So it's just be mindful of those around you and those that you love, you know, reach out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to transition from that, we have a really fun show today. We have an awesome interview with Clay von Karlowitz. He's a talented actor and filmmaker.
Yeah, we're so excited. I think that you guys are going to love the interview that we have with him. So Clay is, as Doug mentioned, actor, filmmaker, also co-owner of Abandoned House Productions, currently in the works. Making the festival circuit is Cannibal Mukbang, which is currently going through Panic Fest. You can actually watch the film through their website, which is really awesome. How cool that we can see these things like in a virtual world right now. He also is a part of the theatrical release of Blackout by Larry Fassenden. This is actually going to be available today, Friday, April 12th. So make sure that you check. I think it's streaming on Apple. So if you want to watch it, I think it's a werewolf film. I personally have pre-ordered it. I cannot wait to watch it. I missed it when it was in New York, making the theatrical release there. It's wrapping up in LA, I believe, this week. And then he's also got Eyes on Joanne, which is currently in development. So we're really happy and honored to have him on the show.
Absolutely. A great conversation. A lot of interesting tidbits. Great advice from Clay. I think you guys will enjoy it. So without further ado, let's cut to our interview with Clay von Karlowitz.
All right. So welcome, Clay. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's been really busy with the festival circuit for you. I am personally so stoked. I've been a fan of yours for several years. I'm lucky to call you a friend as well. I know that there are two huge projects that are currently making the rounds. Cannibal Mukbang, which I just watched this week, which was awesome. So gory, visually romantic, dreamy, but beautifully disturbing. And also Blackout, which is available for streaming this Friday. I am already going to pre-order it today as soon as we're done with this podcast. So welcome to the show.
You guys, thank you so much for having me. Dalen, you and I go way back via my better half, Asta, and in our days in New York. And I'm so excited to get to talking about all things indie film.
Yeah. So let's go right into it. So what really got you into indie film culture, making indie films, and more exclusively as well, horror? I feel like you've really kind of run the gamut with different things. You've done TV series and some romance-based films and whatnot. But, you know, tell us kind of what really led you into all this?
So I grew up on horror movies. I had a bit of a hard knock childhood without getting too much into it. It had its ups and downs, but I felt that horror ended up being a great catharsis for me when I was younger, and something that was a bit of a bonding thing between me and my dad and my brothers. And so that became a thing that I had just always gravitated towards as I worked on becoming an actor. And when I moved to New York, I really lobbied hard for a theater career because I had trained in theater. I loved theater. And it just ended up being that I fell into indie film. I had always wanted to do film, but I wasn't sure, as most actors are, I wasn't sure how I was going to get started. Wasn't sure. You never know your way in to the business, right? And my way in ended up becoming a trauma movie. And that's where I ultimately met my wife and frequent collaborator, co-star Asta Paredes. I did Return to Newcomb High, and that connected me with a lot of people in the genre field. But around the same time, adjacent to that, interestingly enough, I had a correspondence with Larry Fessenden, who is known for his production company Glass Eye Picks, and they do what you could call art horror, stuff that is socially relevant, conscious, has a bit of an intellect to it, and maybe isn't there for the genre thrills first, per se, more so maybe about the story of somebody's struggles in life. And then there are genre elements that are incorporated that help tell the story. I had done some papers on Larry Fessenden in college, and he was always sort of a mentor via correspondence and email. Ended up getting to know him, going to parties, getting to know everybody around that little world. So as I was coming up in the world of trauma and sort of B-movie type things, I got to know people who are doing the other spectrum of indie film, which is a little bit more grounded kind of stuff. And so that was, those sort of things kind of helped to give you a picture of my journey. But along the way, I mean, I've always been a writer and a creator, and I just collaborated with Asta, my wife, and with a few other people I met through Choma, and then through just other circumstances via submitting myself for stuff, you know, and staying in touch, building from my connections, and just keeping it going, trying to be creative. Like I said earlier, you don't know how you're going to, quote, break in or get started or get your foot in the door. You just have to build your community. And so building my community has become a life in independent film. And I love it because it means that I am much more connected to the things that I act in, because either I am involved in writing them, or somebody has written them for me, or somebody is aware of my work and knows me so intimately that they can imagine me in something. And so those kinds of things are what have given me the platforms to build a bit of a resume. And I couldn't be more thankful for that. I recently was reading an interview with Jack Nicholson from 1985. And for anyone who knows film, Nicholson started out with Roger Corman and a lot of B-movie type stuff. And he got to know some other people at the time. He was a writer too. Some of those people include Peter Fonda, Dennis Hopper, Bob Raffleson. And they worked on stuff together. And Jack had done stuff as an actor, but only a few people knew he was good and or would put him in anything. And it just so happened that the guy was focusing on creating stuff behind the scenes, and then a door opened for him with Easy Rider, and that catapulted him. But the thing is, that wouldn't have happened if he hadn't just been trying to carve his own path and doing things in a way that was unique to him and true to him. And it was just an unusual journey. And I would characterize my journey as that. It's unusual, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
That's the beauty of the industry. You can get 20 filmmakers in a room and everyone tells how they broke in, and every story is completely different. Like, there's no direct A to B in the industry. Sometimes you got to go all the way to Z and back just to get the B. But, you know, that's the beauty.
Yep. And along the way, hopefully you are building lifelong friendships with people who you want to create stuff with. I was recently in New York for Brooklyn Horror this past fall. And if for anybody who doesn't know, Brooklyn Horror Film Festival is one of the premier genre festivals out there. And, you know, Austin and I, we know those people. We've known them since they started out with Brooklyn Horror Film Club, and then it became a festival. And
I'm sorry to interrupt. Were you also a part of the club back in the day?
I didn't form the club, but I would go and attend events. So I was putting in time with that community, trying to build something there and support people who are just trying to bring others together, maybe with a common language. And it worked, you know. Eventually they broke out in a big way. And now some of those guys, they have a distribution company, and they're starting to get into film production. But they've been witness to a lot of artists' journeys, myself and my journey included. And so going back to New York was a wonderful homecoming for me, because I've been living in LA for a little while now, and it was a rough year with the strikes and stuff, and I was just adjusting to life on a different coast, and you got to kind of just figure out what it's going to be for you. But going there, it was cool because I met some people there who had also moved from one coast to another, and they were just there because it's a gathering place to celebrate genre filmmaking of all kinds. And I happened to be in two things that were playing there. It was Blackout and Cannibal Mukbang were playing there at the same time. And it was cool. I got to introduce the director of Mukbang to one of her idols and my idols, Larry Fessenden, who I mentioned earlier. And it was sort of this kind of sweet kind of thing folding in on itself, how you have people who grow up watching movies, and then they make their own movies, and then they get to meet their heroes, and their heroes are like, oh, wow, you're doing your own thing. That's great. And that, at the end of the day, that's all people like that want. They want to see others who are empowering themselves, who are just using their resources, pooling their community together, and hopefully building upon their little successes and making things that resonate on a wider scale. And yeah, I'm very, very pleased with the way that things have developed. I could not have predicted how one role would have materialized or the other. Like the summer before we moved to LA, I worked on three different features in the span of like 3 months, and it was insane. I this is an addition to me trying to create my own work and trying to get some of my own screenplays funded and produced into their own features. But then people know me, and or they've been aware of me for one reason or another, and things, they just work out just in ways you might not expect.
Yeah, by the way, Larry's a great guy. I had him in the first feature that I produced, The Battery. And we had no money for the movie, but he believed in the project, and he did it for virtually nothing. So,
wait, yeah. The Battery? Is this Jeremy Gardner?
Yes.
No way! I didn't know you produced that. Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, like, I'm not, like, friends with him or anything, but I know who he is. I've supported his work for years. Another example of a guy who has written and directed and produced and acted in his own stuff. And The Battery is freaking awesome, man. Like, Sam Zimmerman, the guy who runs Shudder, he's a huge fan of that too, and he's been very vocal about it. And of course, as you know, Jeremy's gone on to make other movies and really kind of built up a community. And I think he's still in Florida, so it's like, you know, he's a testament to these kinds of ethos.
Yeah, the horror community is absolutely. The horror community, we are intersected by one or two people. You know, it's like the 2 degrees of separation. But yeah, the battery was fun. We shot that in a summer camp that I used to go to, and the summer camp had closed down maybe 20 years prior. But
okay,
so that's
sounding like a scary story right now.
Yeah, but like, so every time I would go back there, I would still go back there because I knew the ranger that worked there, and I would go hiking, and I'm like, man, this is a perfect spot for a horror movie because all the buildings were there, but you had like trees growing through the floorboards. And it literally was just abandoned. So it's like, this is perfect for a zombie movie. This is what would happen if the zombie apocalypse did happen. People would just kind of abandon places and then nature would take over. So, yeah.
Dude, I love that, man. I don't really talk about it as much because I'm trying to when I do eventually make another feature, I would, you know, similar to what's his name who did Jeremy Saulnier. Similar to Jeremy Saulnier, with him sort of stepping aside from his first feature, Murder Party, and trying to say, like, no, Blue Ruin, that's the one. That's my inaugural feature. I'm in a similar, but I made a movie called The House in the Woods a few years back, around the time I was just out of college, and I was using the same kinds of things, man. Like, there was an abandoned house somewhere just off campus where I went to Kenyon College in the middle of Ohio, and I had made a short based around that concept, and I developed it into a feature as I was graduating, and I used a bunch of resources on campus. I convinced a couple professors to act in it, to lend equipment, and just kind of built that sort of thing, and used some of my own siblings. I put them in it. I shot up in Northeast Ohio and back and forth, and people are like, what are you doing? Why are you spending your summer doing this? And I was like, I don't know. I just have to do it. But it's a very imperfect thing that's on YouTube called The House in the Woods, but it's very similar kind of thing to what you did with The Battery. You took something you were aware of. You thought, maybe we can use these locations for something. If the story is this and that, like, oh, we don't have to spend too much because it's already there and I can figure out. I mean, in my case, I definitely, I bent some rules and maybe did some things without permission, but I learned a good bit about that kind of thing. So I feel like I still have a bit of a scrappy sense for making things happen. And I like that kind of, I like to keep that impulse. I mean, as I kind of want to be taken seriously as a professional artist, still try to keep that edge a little bit. Oh, experimental kind of thing.
I feel like hearing you speak is very similar to hearing Doug speak about filmmaking, because really what drives you guys is just the passion, which it is so apparent. Like, it feels like you just breathe it. Like, this is not just a thing that you do. It's not just your career. This is really your life.
Yeah.
And it's so wonderful to hear that. And I just also think in this community as well, that lives and thrives, whereas other industries, it just doesn't exist. It's just not.
Yeah. I can't imagine doing anything else. Yeah. We all have to be creative with how we pay the rent. And at the end of the day, that's not necessarily what defines us, but hopefully we carve out space for ourselves to do things that we're passionate about. And if we're lucky, we get paid for those things. And when we're given opportunities, we acknowledge the privilege that it is to step into a role, to have the budget, to make a movie, to be in a little community of people who are equally passionate. You really have to appreciate when those things come together. And I look back on those opportunities that I've had and the opportunities that are just around the corner. You know, little talks with people about next projects. And I think I really am blessed. I'm fortunate that I've surrounded myself steadily with people like that. I reflect on being a kid too. And I grew up in a big family. I was a second oldest of nine kids. All right. So eight boys, one girl. And I wanted always to create scenarios so that I could play with my brothers. And that helped to activate me and helped me to feel connected to them. And I find myself just always looking for that kind of thing and just getting excited when I find that kind of camaraderie and that sort of almost illogical dedication to telling a story or an elaborate joke the right way. And it might be make-believe, but it really matters. And how cool is it that there are other people like that who are that crazy and yet dedicated? Like this is insane what we're doing, but we take it seriously. So then you think, okay, so I can trust you. Like, this isn't just something you just walked into and you're like, oh, logging my time. No. I don't want to be around people. I want people who are 100% in it. And it's in that way you can really do awesome work together and bring out stuff that you might not have expected had you been with people who weren't focused.
Yeah, I find that to truly be successful, your main goal is to have to be to make a movie that, you know, and have people watch the product that you make, if someone's goal is to be rich or famous, you know, it takes years and years of dedication, unless you happen to be the 0.1% that I feel like people will burn out, because there's people that work years before they even make a dollar. You know, it's just like trying to break in, trying to find the right team. And I found the only really way to be happy is just be happy making the movie. You know, if someone thinks, okay, I worked so hard, now I'm going to make tens of thousands of dollars. Most likely for your first movie, that's not going to happen. And they're going to burn out and they're going to be unhappy and they're not going to make another movie. So I think to truly be successful, you need to love it and have the passion for just making a film, making art that people are going to enjoy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that can bring contentment to your life. There's going to be a little bit of a business side eventually, but ultimately it's about other stuff. And as long as you got other people who are good at other jobs, they balance you out. And then you don't have to stress. You know that, okay, these people are never going to leave. They're always going to be there because they're always going to care about these very specific things. And that makes for a full life, I find.
Yeah. Money's got to come eventually, but I feel like you need to have the passion just to make the film. And then the rest, you know, and then that leads to the other stuff. But if the main goal is the money or fame, you're probably going to be unhappy because, you know, it's going to be a long road.
Yeah. And people have shelf lives. You might be famous for a chunk of time, but eventually, well, what if there's somebody else who takes your place as far as the spotlight is concerned? Will that have been all of your self-worth, or is there more to it than that? I read the story about how Michael Caine had been in this weird place in his career, and he kind of stepped back from the camera and focused on some other things. And he was talking with Jack Nicholson about where he was at in his career. And then Jack was like, how about you just reinvent yourself as a character actor? How about you just stop trying to be Michael Caine, the movie star, and just start trying to be an actor? Meaning you go, you take the scripts, you are in service of the story, and just let that be enough for you. And then Michael said, you know, it actually ended up working out for me when I realized that I could do that. Because then I let go of the ego, and then I returned to what I loved about it in the first place. And then I attracted more people who said, be in our movies, Michael, but we want to keep you around. And I just, you know, I know that this story relates to a time when he was around middle age or so, but I feel like it's an important sort of lesson for creators of any age. Just kind of think about that. Think about how maybe we really might compare ourselves to other people and we want to be at a certain level, but respect that you might have a different journey. Your journey might be just as unique, just as special. There might be people talking about you years from now the way that you think that you should be talked about, but just you kind of have to learn to master who you are and follow whatever your instincts are, learn things along the way, but then just kind of appreciate that you're great and you have a unique perspective. You just have to fine tune it and just keep the passion alive. And that has a lot to do with keeping the right company.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I'm curious, with that, do you find yourself having a hard time not utilizing the ego part, but do you find it difficult as an actor, filmmaker? I know that you've done even cinematography, some of the music for things as well. Do you find yourself, when you've kind of wrapped on a project, it's hard to get back to normal life, or it's hard to chase the next thing?
Oh, 100%. This feeling goes back to, you know, high school, where I was casting my first play my freshman year. I remember thinking, I bonded with all these people and I wanted to keep going, but then it ends. And you find that you're going back to whatever your roles in the high school ecosystem were. And you think, well, what do I do with myself now? Like, those people seem to be my people. And And yes, in as an actor, as a filmmaker, it does, that sort of thing is a real stigma, and it is a real kind of affliction. And ideally, you will have started to talk about other projects with people on set, and maybe you'll be lucky enough to be jumping from one thing to another. But on the other end of it, I've realized that it really matters that you invest in your quality of life, so that when you are between projects, that you don't lose your mind, that actually you do have great things around that are a constant. I'm lucky to be married to an incredible actress and filmmaker, Asta Paredes, and she and I have two amazing bunnies, and we've built a life together. We have so many memories, so many pictures, and I take solace in that. I like that I have that baseline, because other people might be lucky to be working constantly year after year after year and never really have time in between. And then they have that high. And somebody like me might look at people like that and think, oh, I wish I had that. But, you know, I have to appreciate that I've got some great stuff that other people might not, and other people probably do want eventually, but they don't know how to do that. And I find that I can recharge myself by having a full life outside of creative projects. And I still make time to be creative even when I'm not on set. I still write. I still like to experiment with baking, or, you know, experiment in the kitchen. Like to try to go on little adventures. Go see movies, take a good walk, go on a hike, find things that inspire me. I'm still, while we're works in progress, I'm not claiming to be perfect at this, but I try to find ways to keep that sort of love of life and curiosity about life active. So that way, when I'm called back to set, that way I'm ready to give something, ready to bring something to the table. And I could probably go on about this very subject for about an hour, but hopefully that gives you a bit of an idea of where I'm at.
I love that.
All right, Clay. So we are at the part of the show that we have a little segment called 13 Questions.
Okay.
What the 13 questions is, they're 13 random questions. And this is not all a quiz. It's not a pop quiz. This is all your personal opinions. The questions can range from what's your shoe size to how many hairs on Hulk Hogan's head. So these can go anywhere. So
okay.
I'm going to let Dalen take it away.
All right. So question one, as someone who lives in the indie film space, separate from your own films that you've been a part of, really, is there a film that stands out to you that you wish more people knew about?
Habit. I feel like I'm probably beating a dead horse with this, but people should see Larry Fessenden's 1997 indie horror drama Habit. It's an ambiguous vampire story of a man who's struggling with alcoholism and personal demons in 1990s East Village, New York. And it's a wonderful portrait of a man who is a promising artist or writer, and yet he's being bogged down by the struggles of life. Larry has continued to work in the genre space. He's an inspiration to me personally, as well as so many other people. And it's a movie that should be more in the conversation, and yet it remains in the space of being a bit of a niche indie horror hit. But I have faith that it will find a bigger audience with the release of Blackout, available now at the time of this interview airing, on Apple TV for streaming.
Awesome. All right, number two. Are there any strict rituals you follow to get prepared for a role?
Yes. I like to write out all of my lines longhand as if I wrote the script. It helps me to connect with all of the words. And then I like to put together a playlist, usually. I like to watch movies that deal in similar themes. And other than that, it really depends on the role. I look at when, what's his name? who played Anton Chigurh in No Country for Old Men. I think about how he talked about preparing for a lot of roles very diligently, creating a backstory, which I do. But then there are some times where you just throw out all of that, all of the prep that you might normally do, because the character might be more of a force of nature. And the actor I'm thinking of is Javier Bardem. But yeah, it really does depend on the role. But definitely I write out all my lines longhand. I try to memorize everything up front so I'm 100%. And that way I feel freed up to make choices, to be in the moment.
Preferred viewing, black and white films or films in color?
Films in color, but there are some incredible black and white films out there. I will not dismiss them entirely, but I'm definitely more into films that give you a fuller sense of the world.
Favorite horror movie?
This is a tough one.
Always gets everyone.
Yeah. With respect to the fact that my answer is likely to change depending on the time or the mood that I'm in. Right now, the one that's coming to mind that I think is really outstanding as far as a horror tale and a showcase for an incredibly vulnerable performance by an actor, Angel Heart, Alan Parker, 1987, starring Mickey Rourke.
Was not expecting that one. All right, cool. So someone who has worked on music and is also a singer, baritone, do you have a favorite film score or soundtrack?
I love the soundtrack to High Fidelity. I love the soundtrack to Singles. High Fidelity being a Stephen Frears film, Singles being a Cameron Crowe film, but you know, then again, Cameron Crowe's soundtracks are frequently wonderful. But those two really stand out. As far as a sheer film score, though, it's really hard to beat John Carpenter's Halloween. It's so hard to beat the simplicity of that, and not just the main theme, but every single theme that he wrote for that film. And you're talking about a guy who, even to this day, doesn't consider himself like an actual professional musician. He's just like, well, I know some stuff, and I just try to work with what I got. But then you can create something that's art. So, yeah, let's go with that.
The beauty of that score is, think about this, the genius of John Carpenter, the shape stalks is one note on the keyboard repeated. And it's so tense and just captivating, and it's literally one note repeated. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
That's the genius of John Carpenter.
I'll never forget a story when John Williams showed Steven Spielberg the idea he had for the theme for Jaws, and then Steven Spielberg looks at him after he gives him some of it, and he's like, are you serious? He's like, no, just trust me. And look where we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I might know the answer to this, but favorite horror director?
Favorite horror director. Okay. So if we're talking indie film, of course I would say Larry. Of course I would say Larry Fessenden. If we're talking about, let's say decent budget horror, because John Carpenter never got like the bigger budgets that he wanted after The Thing unfairly just fell flat on its face at the box office in the wake of E.T. What the hell, America? John Carpenter would be one of those. And then Wes Craven, just a wonderful director of actors, a guy who could really get true emotional performances out of his actors and yet help them find the humor in work and go further and explore ideas and things that were unknown. And it's just a lot of kind of great crossover with his movies. Some of Craven's movies, around the late 80s, early 90s, maybe can get to like a little bit of a corny kind of thing, but he hits the sweet spot more than a few times. And I mean, I don't think I even need to mention some of those highlights. But yeah, Wes Craven, probably the best actor's director for horror, and also just incredible at developing a mood and suspense.
This one's probably going to be the toughest question, but we're halfway through. Do you have a favorite bunny child?
Oh, gosh. How can a father choose? Oh, geez. Well, look, so we have Gia, who is a Lion's Head spot mix. She is a classically trained actress, diva. She doesn't take interviews unless it's a very special occasion. You have to come to her. You have to grovel before her, and she's high maintenance, but at the same time, when she gives you her approval, you feel like you've really earned it, and she's a queen. Dewey, on the other hand, the little rascal, Havana Rabbit, he is a goofball. He is a menace. He is the most mischievous little jokester, and I love that about him. I kind of, in some ways, I identify with him. So, you know, it's kind of a father-son thing going on, me and little Dewey. So, I would say that he and I have that, like, closer relationship. But I love Gia so much. She's been around for so much of it's my journey as an adult, growing up, coming up in the city and moving cross country. And she's so I won't give you a definite answer because I just can't. But I think that you get a sense for the vibe.
Understood. If you could choose one of these to do for the rest of your career, but only one, would you choose directing, acting, or producing?
Acting.
What? So I know that you've also done a lot of bartending. What would you say is your favorite cocktail and or mocktail?
My favorite cocktail is one that I invented. It's called the Old School Hipster, and it's 2 ounces of, oh my God, I'm spoiling this recipe. It's okay. It's fine. There's a lot of home bartenders now post COVID. So it's basically, how about this? I won't give you the ratios. I'll just give you the ingredients, but it's bullet rye. It's Fernet. It's simple syrup. It's espresso. It's Angostura bitters. And it's topped with an orange peel. It's served like an old fashioned, but it is a great blend of flavors. It feels like coffee and cigarettes, and it feels like a late night at a jazz club in New York. And there's just something about the blend of that drink that really appeals to me. I love making all kinds of drinks, but at the end of the day, I do gravitate more towards the robust, spicy, smoky, earthy flavors. So I would go with an old fashioned, specifically though, the one that I made.
Favorite movie watching snack?
Popcorn. What a versatile food. And I have made so many different kinds of popcorn over the years. I never get bored of it. Some days I do like a basic butter and salt thing, but other days I'll do maple sriracha. I'll do something that's maybe a little zestier, or like, you know, is a little nutritional yeast kind of thing going on. Or I'll do something that's got like a melted chocolate kind of thing if I feel like making it, you know, a Halloween themed kind of thing. It never gets old for me. I love, it's also like a stress food. I like the texture of it, and there's something about the smell of popcorn that just it generates these feelings of seeing movies with your friends, your loved ones when you're growing up, and it's always going to be something that I want to just keep around.
Who do you think would win in a fight, John Carpenter in his prime, Larry Fessenden at any age, because I feel like he's tough, Lloyd Kaufman, or Clive Barker?
What was the last one?
Clive Barker.
Ooh. I'm going to have to give this one to Larry.
Okay.
Larry's a scrappy fellow, and I think that he's been in more scuffles than he lets on, and he might surprise his enemy with some kind of a crazy right hook that you never saw coming, or maybe he just has a weapon on him. Sorry, no offense, Clyde Barker or John Carpenter, but Larry in the New York streets. Sorry, that's no contest.
Favorite Halloween candy?
Let's go with Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. I'm a big chocolate and peanut butter guy, and nothing really can top those two flavors together. Halloween is a great excuse to taste other candy bars that you don't normally eat throughout the year. I don't ever eat Butterfingers. It's not like I keep candy around as much, but I don't eat Butterfingers. I don't necessarily keep Snickers around. It's nice to have those, but yeah, I mean, it's basic. Also, its marketing is like orange and dark brown or orange and black, and it's sort of the colors that you associate with Halloween and with like a jack-o'-lantern. So let's go with that.
Think about how many candies we wouldn't have tried without trick-or-treating. You know, all these things we would never have even tried. Like, I would probably never try a Mr. Good Bar or a Clark Bar, but because of trick-or-treating, I got a little sampling and things that I grew up to love.
No, there's just like these little things you think of as filler, but then you think, oh, you know, it's nice to just have that be out of your control for a minute. It's not that I, as an adult, go trick-or-treating, although I certainly look for excuses to be around things of that nature, whether it be hosting a Halloween party or whatnot. Just any excuse to go and buy a bunch of those variety packs and put them in a bowl and be like, come on, take some.
Yeah.
But then at the end of the day, I still want them to take only a little so I can find different ways to eat them for the next 2 months.
Absolutely.
And final question, is there a type of role that you haven't had the opportunity to play yet that you would just love to have?
Oh, man. I have an answer for that. So I mentioned earlier Jack Nicholson and how he kind of came up in the world of film. And he had worked with Bob Raffleson as well as Peter Fonda and Dennis Hopper. And so he ended up, after Easy Rider, he ended up teaming with Raffleson on this movie called Five Easy Pieces, in which you have this character he plays, Bobby DePay, who left behind life of potentially a promising career as a pianist. And he grew up in a household where his father was this piano prodigy, and it's high standards. So it's very like intellectual, artsy family. And he left it all behind. He went and disappeared into somewhere in the Midwest, and he adopted a folksier kind of a vibe and accent, and he took a construction job, and he just liked to just like shed all of the weight of the expectations of those things, and then he gets kind of pulled back towards the life that he left because his father has stroke and his sister's like, oh, you know, maybe you can go and see him. And so then he has to go on this road trip. I'm not going to go into the whole movie, but that kind of role where you have the spectrum of a person who is settling for the life of something that seems like simpler, and yet it's downplaying and ignoring a lot of other elements that are great and wonderful and unique and yet scary and intimidating. And I love the complexity of that sort of thing. I would love to have an opportunity to play a character with that range. And I've certainly had the opportunity to play a lot of complex characters on the stage, but in film, I'm still working towards that. But I have had some really great opportunities that have let me showcase little aspects of different parts of me. And I'll continue to fight for stories that speak to me. And whether or not they're in the genre or they're more somewhere in the realm of other genres, like drama or social realism, otherwise, you know, I want to make stuff that speaks to people.
Yeah. This was so awesome. Clay, thank you. What a pleasure. What a joy. Can you remind us What have you got going on and where can people find you?
Absolutely, Daylin. And it really was a pleasure for me as well. And Doug, thank you guys so much. I could go on for a lot longer than we have time for. But right now, Blackout, again, by the time this interview comes out, Blackout is streaming. You can get it on VOD, Apple TV. And it's a wonderful werewolf horror drama written and directed by Larry Fessenden, starring Alex Hurt. There's a whole incredible cast to it. I'm lucky to be a part of it. My wife Asta is lucky, is a great part of it. It's got an incredible cast of fresh faces and indie faces, all kinds of genre talent. And then I have Cannibal Mukbang, written and directed by Amy Coogie, starring April Consolo, Nate Wise, and myself. It's a toxic romance kind of thing, a little bit like Raw, a little bit like Promising Young Woman. And it is still making the rounds at genre festivals. And fingers crossed, it'll get some solid distribution soon. Please watch this space, because this movie is making waves. It is hitting lists. People are calling it out for being an exciting, unpredictable feature and a blend of so many different genre elements. And I am so proud to have been a part of it.
Thank you. And also check out Eyes on Joanne, which is currently in development. So a little sneak peek for you guys on that too.
Yep. Yep. Another one where I'm going to say fingers crossed, but very passionate about that project. It is very much in the genre space, and that's all I'm going to say.
Thank you so much, Clay.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Clay.
Look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks for listening to our interview with Clay. Great guy, talented filmmaker, talented actor, and I had a great time.
Me too. I mean, how awesome is he, really? And also, I think he forgot to mention, but he is on Instagram at Clay Von Karlowitz. Which also, let me just double check and make sure that is in fact accurate. So we do Clay justice. But what a pleasure. Yep. And it is at Clay Von Karlowitz on Instagram, and just a joy, really. Also, like, what a plethora of knowledge he gave to us.
Absolutely. Yeah. Great guy. We'll definitely have him back.
Yeah.
You know,
can't wait.
So speaking of Instagram, where can we find you on Instagram and all the different socials?
You can find me only on Instagram currently at ghoul_whip. And Doug, where can we find you?
You can find me at scared_stiff_films on the Instagram. And don't forget to check out our trailer for Halloween Candy, which is up on the Scared Stiff TV YouTube channel.
And the theatrical release of Blackout, you can find that streaming today, Friday, April 12th. So make sure to check it out. On demand on Apple. Can't wait to see all of it.
And check back next week. We are going to get back on a more regular scheduled programming. So we're really good at the first few months. We had weekly episodes without fail. I know the last month and a half, it's been a little rough. I know our lives got busy, but we are not going anywhere. We are here for the long run. So tune in again next week for a brand new episode.
Can't wait. Thanks for your patience with us, guys. But, you know, life, we're allowed to get busy here and there. We missed you too, but we're back at it with the flowers just blooming away.
Absolutely. It is quality, not quantity, right?
Yes.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Bye.